the Five Star Zone with Rico Beard.
Welcome to another edition of the Five Star Zone. Rico Beard, Hale Shelton III from the Big Ten Network, joining me on this show, talking some Big Ten hoops. Harold, big night on Tuesday night, and when the dust settled, went from three teams in first place to just one. And that's the University of Michigan. They handle their business. They Purdue jumped out. At some point, they had a couple times they had a 10-point lead, but in the end, Michigan found a way to get back in here. I guess what's been the secret to this Wolverine success?
You know, I think it's been really interesting to see how well they've closed games. If you think about every game outside of the game at Mackey, you look up, it's a 3 or 4 point game with a minute left.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't matter who they're playing. It could be Penn State. It could be Rutgers. It could be Indiana. It could be Purdue.
Good or bad.
Yeah, good or bad. Right. It's always a 3 or 4 point game with a minute left. And I think for me, the growth that they've shown from non-conference win, they lost to Oklahoma late when they filed fears on a three-pointer, or when it, you know, Wake Forest or Arkansas, where they had looks at the basket, they didn't really know what to do when it got tough, and they lost those games. And those were their only three losses for a while. And now they figured it out. You know, it's Trey Donaldson making shots. You know, we saw Reuben Jones make some big plays late. You know, Danny Wolf, Golden's been getting and ones, filing guys out. So I think it's just been by committee. It hasn't just been, hey, Danny Wolf, go make a play for us. You know, they've been able to get multiple guys to make plays when it matters. And they've done a really, really good job of, you know, I would say controlling the glass. They get to the free throw line a lot and make them. So They've been one of the best clutch time teams in the conference, and it's clearly showed. I mean, they've got 8 wins by 4 points or fewer in conference play, and no other team has more than 5.
Okay, so now, Harold, I had this conversation with a Wolverine fan, and it's a catch-22. It's a double-sided coin because, yes, is it a good thing that you play so many close games, whether the teams are good or bad, but you finish, or are you playing with fire, meaning that there's going to be almost like that Minnesota game where you let a team hang around and they hit a lucky shot and you're sitting there looking like, wait, is game over? Yeah, it's over. They beat you. I mean, yes, I like the fact that they're never out of a game, but it's like they can't put a team away either. Well, you think that'll come back to bite them later on in the season or NCAA tournament?
Certainly could. I mean, you can't continue to turn the ball over like they do at a high rate and beat elite teams consistently. You know, I thought that they did a good job of fighting all the way back against Purdue, because it seemed like every time they would get close, Purdue would make some plays, push the lead back out, and, you know, seems like Michigan would cut it back, and then they go back to 8 or 10, and then they finally got over that hump. But you're right. I think if you're trying to get to San Antonio, then you can't afford to do that in a round of 32, or Sweet 16, or Elite Eight. You could play with fire once or twice against really good teams, but to do that consistently, I think, is asking for a lot of trouble. The fact that you still turn the ball over too much has been better. It's certainly been better, but you still turn it over at an alarming rate to try to win a national championship or at least get to a Final Four. And I think that could be a problem later. I do think the biggest thing is not have Danny Wolf be the primary point guard. Let him kind of find his spots, pick his spots, and kind of work through the big fella and work through Donaldson. And I think they've kind of figured something out there.
All right, so now the other team, Purdue. Purdue beat Michigan by, like, I think 30 points at Mackey. What happened to them? Because it looked like they had a big lead, and then it shrunk to 3 at halftime. Then they pushed it back out to a big lead. If you're Purdue and you're Matt Painter, how did this happen, and where you go from here?
I think the bigs getting in foul trouble really hurt them. And then once Caleb First went out of the game, that kind of took away their ability to switch that big pick and roll. I think it took away ability to to clean up the defensive glass, and that's when you saw Golden get some offensive rebounds, some putbacks. I think once Kaufman, Wren, and First, when they were out there together, they were playing really well. And then as soon as First fouled out and Kaufman, Wren got in foul trouble, that's when you start to see the big fellas kind of get things going. Because early on, Purdue was killing them on the glass, and they were getting whatever they wanted. And once that foul trouble happened, I think that's when the tide started to stem. And so, you know, credit to Michigan. They were active. They got punched in the mouth early, responded, got punched in the mouth again, responded. And, you know, kudos to them, because when we saw that in Mackey, it clearly did not, they did not respond.
Oh.
So they certainly learned some things from that.
All right, though. So later that evening, up the road, in East Lansing, Michigan State takes on Indiana. And Harold, it was funny because for those watching, it had that feel, and I was just like, you know, it reminded me of when they played Wisconsin, and they had a banner already rolled up, and it was in the rafters, and they just had to drop it down.
Yep.
And funny thing happened. They forgot to tell the team. I mean, party celebration was all planned. Izzo was supposed to become the all-time Big Ten winningest coach. You're going to beat Bobby Knight. You're going to beat Bobby Knight's team, which is also the first Big Ten win that you got, was against Indiana. I mean, this was a Hollywood script. Steve Mariucci, like Steve Smith, like a lot of dignitaries were in the house for this. Mark Hollis is up there. Like a lot of MSU dignitaries, a lot of people who meant something to Izzo was there. D'Antonio was there. Coach Smith, the current football coach, was there. Football players were there. Former basketball players were there. Everybody was there waiting for this coronation to happen. Funny thing happened, though. Michigan State goes up 20-8 in the first half. Looks like blowout. Vegas had it as an 11-point spread. Okay, Vegas knew what they were talking about. Indiana switches to a zone, closes the first half out on a 24-9 run. MSU got stuck on 29 points, I think, for like 7.5 minutes and acted as if they had never seen a zone before in their life. And I credit Mike Woodson of this. A lot of coaches outcoach themselves. He said, until you hit open shots, I'm not going to quit this zone. You got to show me you're the worst three-point shooting team in the nation. Show me you can hit something. 4-23. That was awful. I mean, for everybody sitting there for this big party plan, I mean, it's literally like you got a big surprise anniversary party set up for this couple, and they come through the door in a knockdown, drag-out fight. Well, everybody's waiting to say surprise. It's like, I guess we all just going to go home. That's what happened again with Michigan State. If you're the Spartans, Harold, first of all, was it just as simple as they couldn't hit open shots? They couldn't make anything. You put Jace Richardson in the starting lineup. Holloman goes to the bench. But in the end, I have no idea what I just saw last night.
Yeah, I think it was multiple things. For one, if you're going to go in that zone, you got to find a way to attack it in the middle. And there were a few times, especially early in the first half, where – they were trying to find someone to put in the middle of that zone. And then it looked like they went with Fiddler, and then Fiddler didn't want to shoot it once he got in the middle of that zone. And there was a play toward the end of the first half where you could see they got the look they wanted. They passed it to Fiddler. Then he faked and then passed it out. And I think it was Fears. And you could just see him kind of put his head down like, dude, you got to shoot that. Like, that's why you're at that spot.
Right. And you saw that too. Okay.
Yeah. So – it just seemed like no one wanted to take that shot. Then in the second half, you saw he took a couple of them in the middle of that zone, and he either made it, got fouled, got to the free throw line. And then once the game got closer to the end, it was the same thing, but it was like the end of the first half. Instead of shooting it, he looked to pass it out, and they wound up turning it over. And so I think it just kind of became contagious. Like, guys started missing. I think it got to them mentally. Nobody really wanted to shoot at that point. And again, credit to Indiana because, you know, they got longer wings. They got the bigs, and they stayed with it. I didn't think that there was enough. I don't think they set enough screens to try to get around it. Like, because you could still run your offense. You could still run, you know, picks and pops and all of that.
Okay, Harold, it seemed to me like everybody was waiting for somebody to do basically what Jace Richardson did against Oregon and help us out. They was waiting for Superman to show up, except for nobody showed up. And you saw it wasn't a team. I just saw five individuals out there like, I don't really know what to do, coach.
Yep. Yeah, and I think if you're going to play Jeremy Fears like that, he has to look to score. Like, he can't just take two shots. Like, he has to look to penetrate. He's got to look to at least get fouled. They're going to leave him open. He's going to have to shoot it. Like, two shots is not going to be enough. I thought Holloman sat quite a while in that second half when they really needed some scoring, and I thought he played pretty well in that second half once he got back in the game. But again, just the fact that, you know, he played 13 minutes, but he probably could have played more considering how Fears wasn't aggressive at all and looked really tentative. The bigs certainly didn't give him much at all. Like, once Carson Cooper went out of the game, I mean, Sapawa and Kohler didn't give him much.
And, but see, here's the thing, and I said last night, what you saw was MSU's got a bunch of tall guys, but they don't have any bigs. They don't have anybody that can just go down low and get it done. Kohler, no. Zapala, no. I mean, Cooper, kind of, but he got into foul trouble. Yep. I mean, the charge that he did, it was – I was like, Carson, what was you trying to do? Like, don't get up and say, was that a charge? Like, yes, that was a charge. Like, he was standing there. You're 7 feet tall, and you just going to go right through him? That's not how this works. It's not how any of this works.
That, and why even give him the ball at that point on the break? Like, why are you giving it to Carson Cooper at the, you know, on the wing and having him drive on the break? Like, that just didn't make sense. Yeah. Kind of wait for him to go further to the basket and then try to get it to him and then maybe use him as a decoy and get around and try to get a layup or something. But yeah, it was concerning. You know, now it's the fourth straight game they've trailed at the half, lost three of them, and you needed a, you know, all-world performance from Jace Richardson to not have a four-game losing streak. So this is certainly going the wrong way. And you know, we talked about the February thing last year and the way this schedule looks, like there could be some more losses coming up here. So they're going to have to figure something out quick.
Okay, Harold, I'm not trying to be, you know, caught up in the moment, but – let's just say the first 10 games, they were 9-1. Is it possible they could finish out 1-9 or 2-8? Because, yeah, you talk about this. We were talking at the end of the game, okay, well, what game does Izzo get the victory at Illinois? I had that penciled as a loss at the beginning of the year when you play that win-loss game. Mm-hmm. So if they win at Illinois, that'll be a shocker to me. It's kind of like I thought Rutgers would beat them at Madison Square Garden. Then you have Purdue at home. Then you're on the road at Michigan. Then you're at Maryland, which is a tough venue to play at. Then you got Wisconsin at home. And then you got at Iowa, which is like the easiest game left on the schedule. And then you got Michigan at home on Senior Day. We're sitting there like, okay, does he get the record in the next four games, or do you have to wait until that at Iowa game before he finally gets that record?
I feel like they're going to find a way to win one of these games, but it's kind of hard to say which one. I do think Indiana presents some challenges in terms of having two bigs you can throw it to that can both get a bucket and having the long wings to kind of, you know, disrupt some stuff. I'll be curious to see if any of the other teams that they're going to play will play a zone like that.
I asked Izzo that question. And he looked at me like, yeah, we ain't going to see no more zones, kind of. And I'm like, if I'm another team,
it's a copycat league,
I would be practicing, call it the Michigan State zone. Like, I know we normally don't play zone, but against them, until they hit shots, we playing zone. That's just me. If I'm Illinois, if I'm Purdue, if I'm Michigan, I'm a zone. I'm gonna slow the game down. You're not gonna get the fast break points, and you're gonna have to make some shots, which is the hardest thing for you guys to do.
No, I'm with you on that. I mean, I certainly would too, especially if you're gonna get tentative point guard play. If you're gonna get post play where they don't really know what to do with it once they get it there, get it, the ball inside. And, you know, Purdue's not a team that plays a lot of zone. You know, Illinois kind of mixes it up here and there, but they usually aren't a zone team. They're more aggressive. But, you know, to your point, you know, you saw how it worked against Indiana. You saw what USC and UCLA did in terms of, hey, we're not going to let you run. You're going to have to score in the half court. Will teams try to adjust what they do to, you know, take away Michigan State's biggest strengths? Or will they try to say, hey, this is what we do the best and this is how we're going to play? And even if that, you know, kind of plays into Michigan State's strengths, we're just going to do what we do. Some coaches are like that, and we're going to see. But I certainly didn't expect Indiana to play zone. And like you said, credit to Woodson, because
well, Izzo said he didn't expect. He was like, Indiana doesn't play zone that often. They weren't prepared for it. I mean, they just weren't. And they looked lost. The last time I saw that team look that way, it harkened back to the Syracuse game in the tournament. But at least then you knew Syracuse ran a zone. You knew what you were getting into. And the Syracuse is you flipping a coin. If you hitting your shots, that year you buried Syracuse by 20. If you didn't hit your shots, Syracuse would win the game. Yep. They couldn't hit their shots. And, yeah, before people start wasn't Jaren Jackson. The big three missed 7 shots in the final 38 seconds of the game. Cassius Winston, Miles Bridges, Josh Langford missed 7 shots, folks. If they hit one of those, Michigan State moves on. It wasn't because Jaren was on the bench. That I'm so sick of. Matter of fact, I was driving back home, had to hang up on one of my frat brothers because he was like, and you know, it was like Syracuse when Jaren, as soon as he said Jaren, I'm like, goodbye, click. Not doing like, this.
Jaren even had an interview. I can't remember where it was, but he even had an interview how he said that he was so confused and flustered by the zone. So if he's telling you years later, like, man, look, I didn't know what was going on with the zone, you still going to blame Izzo?
Right.
Like, come on.
Right. So, but yeah, I look at this team. I look at the remaining schedule that they have. And, man, to start off 9-0, looking like, okay, you got – I thought the first round – I thought they were going to be one of the four, you know, top four teams in the Big Ten tournament.
For sure.
I mean, right now, if you told me out of the 7 remaining games that they would go 3-4, I'd take that.
Yeah, I mean, that puts you at, what, 13-7 in the league? I mean, that's probably good enough for a top four for the Big Ten tournament.
I think you would need some help at that point because you got Maryland playing good ball. You got Michigan on top. You got Purdue with a relatively easier schedule to finish out the year. I think Purdue has your schedule. Hold on, let me check and see. I think Purdue kind of has your schedule to end the year.
Yeah, because a lot of the teams kind of play each other. So
you're right. No, Purdue has to – they got to go. They got Wisconsin at home, at Michigan State, at Indiana, UCLA at home, Rutgers at home, and at Illinois to finish the year out.
So, and then, you know, Michigan and Maryland still have to play each other. Michigan, Illinois still have to play each other.
So, yeah, you're right. I mean, it could just be a round robin with, you know, blood fest where everybody just beat the hell out of each other. But, man, the confidence level that I think a lot of people had looking at this Michigan State team, you know, kudos to USC. They cracked the code. UCLA said, okay, we could do that.
Mm-hmm.
Oregon tried. And remember, Oregon was winning. I think what's going to get lost in that is, oh, Jace did this. Michigan State was down by 14 to Oregon at halftime. Yep. And looked like they were done, had a miraculous comeback. And then Indiana just walked in there. I don't know if they've just burnt out. I don't know what it is. But when I look at this team, I guess I'm going to ask the question I always ask. Like, how do you see the Big Ten finishing out, Harold? Who's the top 14?
So I think it'll be Purdue, Michigan. So I really want to say Maryland, but I can't trust Maryland away from College Park.
What about UCLA?
I think UCLA's schedule certainly helps because they've got – yeah, I think they're actually done with all of the big schools. So I put them in there. And And they're the one probably going to come down to Michigan State and Wisconsin.
I was about to say, you always put Wisconsin in the top four. For so there was only – it's the safest bet. And aside from 1 year, I think and I would have to double-check this because you're the stat guy. I think recently – and by recently, I'm going back to maybe the last 10, 15 years – Wisconsin has been finished in the top four of the Big Ten every year, but once. That's it. Like, yeah. It's like death and taxes. They may not win the Big Ten, but every year, no matter how they work out, no matter how bad they look, in the end, they always end up with one of those double buys, except for 1 year. Mm-hmm. It's a safe bet. So yeah,
it might have been a year where like they were tied for fourth and like wound up finishing fifth because of a tiebreaker. But
no, it was the
actual standings. Like they're always top four.
Like, no, this was one. There was 1 year. It was like maybe 2 years ago or 3 years ago. They were just awful. They were bad. But that was it. Other than that. And like this year, nobody's talked about Wisconsin at all in the Big Ten, except they're sitting two games out. They get an opportunity, you know, they because I think they still got to play Michigan too, don't they?
So they lost to them early. That was the first game of the Big Ten slate back in December. Right. So that's the thing with Wisconsin that we're going to find out, because their best wins right now in conference play probably at USC or home against Ohio State, like because they lost to Michigan, they lost to Illinois, they lost to UCLA, they lost to Maryland. Yeah. So they don't have a marquee win yet. But they're going to play Purdue. They're going to play Michigan State, both on the road, to get Illinois at home.
So basically, they're Michigan State earlier this year when they were 9-0, but everybody was like, well, who did you beat?
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Like their wins are Iowa, Rutgers, Minnesota, Ohio State, USC, Nebraska, Northwestern, Indiana, Iowa. So they got no marquee wins at all of their nine, but they got three big opportunities coming up. And so if you win a couple of those, you're certainly in the mix, because I think teams are going to, as they continue to play each other, four or five losses might wind up winning the league still.
And like, just going back for Michigan State, how does Izzo stop the bleeding? Because I asked him, I'm like, is it as simple as just you got to hit open shots, or do you have to come up with new schemes? Because, yeah, your final games, you're going to be going up against the dogs of the Big Ten. And, you know, no offense to USC and UCLA and Indiana, but if you can't handle these three, what are you going to do when you got to play Purdue? Even though the game's not at Mackey, and Purdue is mortal, but in that Purdue game, I expect Fletcher Lawyer to play out of his mind to get revenge for his brother, Foster Lawyer, and how MSU fans treated him. So that game, if you're a better, take Fletcher Lawyer over 20 points. It's the easiest bet you can have, because he will come in there and rain down fire in the Breslin Center. I promise you that. And, I mean, I look back at the Illinois game that MSU won a few weeks ago at the Breslin Center. You know, a lot of Illinois fans still upset at how it ended, saying that, you know, the fouls and the refs basically cheated them out of the game. Yeah, this the next three games I see are going to be very difficult.
Very.
At Illinois, Purdue at home, and at Michigan, simply because it's Michigan. Now, the thing about Michigan, styles make the fight. Michigan got two bigs. That poses a problem for Michigan State. Michigan also turns the ball over, creating fast break points. That poses a problem for Michigan. I think for that game, That I think you're looking at another close game, and then when it comes to close games, Michigan just knows how to win those things. So I don't know, man. I got nothing.
I'm with you. I think that part is going to be really interesting when those two teams play, and I believe it's on the 21st when they play. It's going to be next Friday.
Yeah.
Like you said, Michigan State is at their best when they can turn you over, get out, score off turnovers, fast break, all that kind of stuff. So if Michigan is doing that, then I certainly think Michigan State can win that game. But as we saw yesterday with Indiana, they got two big dudes you could throw it into, and they got no problem trying to attack and score. Now, we know they'll try to do that with Golden. I know Wolf can be more perimeter-oriented, but he's shown, you know, a propensity to to get his off the bounce and do it in the post too. And they certainly can make threes. You know, they also are fifth in the country in 2-point percentage. So they've been very good, but I do think they want to play fast, which should help Michigan State. I just don't know. There's got to be somebody else that's going to make shots outside of Jace Richardson. It just can't just be him. It's, you know, Akins has been, you know.
And it's funny because when you watch him in practice, when you watch him in warmups, they're a different team. Shots are falling.
Yeah.
They get into the game. It's just like the basket just becomes like this big, and they're playing with an 8-foot ball. It's like, yeah, it's just not going to work. So, you're right. Though, if I'm Michigan, I'm slowing the game down. I'm not in a hurry.
Yeah.
Because I do have a stat for you. I do have one. MSU, the magical number for them is 68. When they score 68 or less points, they've lost every game. Last night, they scored 67 points. That's their magical number. When they get in the 70s, forget about it. Ball game.
Yep.
But, yeah, in their losses, Kansas, 69 points. Memphis, 63 points. And
– yeah, USC was 64. UCLA, 61. 61, Indiana, 67. Yep.
The only time they won in the 60s, they won one game where they scored 69 points.
Yep,
Ohio State. Yeah. So, 68 is the magical number. If you're a Michigan State fan, you need them to go out and score more than 68 points, and you got a chance for a win. Right. 70s guarantees you a win.
Yeah. Because the defense has still been good enough to win these games. I thought they struggled yesterday against Indiana just in terms of the bigs getting in foul trouble. And then at that point, you know, Renu and Bala were kind of in the rhythm and were able to do whatever they wanted. I don't know how many other teams are going to have that kind of combo. But otherwise, like, I thought they were mostly fine. It's not like Indiana hit a bunch of threes or, you know, it was a bunch of open shots all over the place. They hit some tough shots. The defense, for the most part, has been there. Yeah. But got to make shots.
Yeah, so it comes down to, you got anything for me? I had that stat for you. I had to write that down, but I'm like, I know he knows this, but you at least, you humor me. You at least make me feel like I'm saying or doing something. Thank you.
I think the biggest thing is this, the Michigan close games thing is crazy. And I know I kind of said it tongue in cheek, but it is a bit true. Like, if you look up, you could just kind of wait until it's 2 minutes or a minute left and see what's going on in Michigan. And you're going to look and it's like, oh, Oregon, it's a 2-point game. Penn State's a 2-point game. Indiana, Purdue, it's all 2-point games. And so they've just continued to win these kind of games. And again, they got 8 wins by 4 points or fewer, which is tied for the most, but any major conference team in the last 20 seasons. And they still got 7 games left.
Yeah. So, because I was shocked, because I'm like, I'm driving to the Breslin Center, and then I look at the rate. I'm like, wait, Purdue was killing them.
Yeah, Purdue was a complete control.
And then I get out the car, I walk in 10, and it's like, wait, Michigan winning? Wait, how'd that happen?
Yep.
So, yeah, they do.
Yeah, you got to put them away like Purdue did the first game, because if you let them hang around, they're going to find a way.
So, yeah, so as of now, Michigan is on top of the Big Ten. Something tells me by the time we meet back next week, it could be all different. Everything could change. We'll see what happens. I'm trying to think what would be the best day to do it next week. Yeah, we'll figure it out. We'll be back next week.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else, Errol?
No, that's it. That's it. But, you know, February, as we've seen, it has been a bugaboo, continues to be so. And, you know, Michigan State's going to have to figure it out if they want to get back in the race. I think the USC loss and this Indiana one, 2 games, you are pretty solid favorites in. You lose both. It kind of takes you out of contention unless you find a way to win 3 steal next 4.
Yeah, you got to steal some now. So.
Yep.
All right, brother. For Harold Sheldon, I'm Rico Beard. Thanks for watching the 5-Star Zone. Keep liking and subscribing. We will be back next week. Until then, we'll see you. Enjoy your hoops.